before the high school prom, we need you to become a BAI buddy. When you become a BAI buddy, you help us become grounded, stronger, and resilient through these shaky financial times. As a BAI buddy, you can donate any amount of your choosing on a monthly basis. In return, you will receive membership benefits and discounts at local businesses, as well as a signature WBAI tote bag. To become a BAI buddy, or for more information, go to give2wbai.org. Join us today and help our dreams grow.
What are they, Dad?
They're hippies, son.
I love you.
If you're going to say.
Hey, man, I thought Donald Reagan got rid of all them in the 80s, man. Talking about them yippy to yuppy, man.
Stuck in the 60s happens to us too. Listen to Morning Dew every Sunday morning from 1 to 3 a.m. Only here at 99.5 FM WBAI New York.
That's a marvelous sight. The ship is riding majestically toward us like some great feather. It's practically standing still now. They've dropped ropes out of the nose of the ship, and it's been taken a hold of down on the field by a number of men. The back motors of the ship are just holding it just enough to keep it from...
It bursts into flames. Get it started. Get it started. It's crashing. And it's crashing. It's crashing terrible. Oh, my. Get out of the way, please. It's burning, bursting into flames, and it's falling on the mooring fast and all the folks between it. This is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world.
History lives on the Golden Age of Radio. Every Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m., here on listener-sponsored non-commercial WBAI New York.
And the frame is crashing to the ground, not quite to the mooring mast. All the humanity and all the fans.
Hello and welcome to Health Action here on listener-supported community radio WBAI in New York. I'm Mark Hannay, Director of Metro New York Healthcare for All and a member of the Health Action Collective that brings you this program every week. In the first half of this week's program, we're going to be taking a look at the renewed fight for healthcare as a human right and the March for Healthcare. There'll be marches happening across the country this Saturday, sort of modeled on the women's marches that happened in January, to lift up the healthcare issue. And with the developments in Washington late last week, it'll be a bit of a victory celebration for advocates. So stay tuned for that. And Catherine Davis will be here in the second half of the program. But we'll start with the Health Action News for this week, taken from stories posted to KaiserHealthNews.org. The congressional newspapers The Hill and Politico report that Senator Bernie Sanders is planning to introduce a single-payer style health care bill in Congress. The Vermont senator said during a town hall this past weekend that he plans to introduce a Medicare for All bill within a couple of weeks. During the town hall, his colleague, Representative Peter Welch, also from Vermont, said that he would introduce the same bill in the House. The former Democratic presidential candidate said that such a plan could help deliver on President Trump's pursuit of lowering drug prices, adding that he'd like to work with the White House on the legislation. The comments come after Speaker Paul Ryan last week pulled the American Health Care Act, the Republican health care proposal, amid dwindling support among his conference. That move sparked the first legislative defeat for President Trump and followed 7 years of rhetoric from congressional Republicans who campaigned on a pledge to repeal and replace the law. Republicans who hold a 237-193 edge in the House seemingly had been in a position to pass health care legislation without Democratic votes. But last week's debacle set up the possibility that President Trump might reach out to Democrats. The Vermont senator also ripped the Republican health care bill to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act as a disastrous piece of legislation that would have merely served as a tax break for the wealthy. ProPublica reports that Trump administration has quietly approved a Heritage Foundation staffer who has railed against civil rights protections for transgender patients as the new director of the federal agency charged with protecting the civil rights of all patients. Although the administration did not issue a formal announcement, Roger Severino is now listed on the website of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services as director of the Office for Civil Rights. His position was as director of the DeVos Center for Religion and Civil Society at the Heritage Foundation, where he focused his efforts on religious liberty, marriage, and life issues. The DeVos Center is named for the in-laws of Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. The Civil Rights Office is in charge of enforcing patient privacy protections and ensuring that patients' civil rights are protected and that they are free from discrimination and have access to services such as interpreters. Based on his prior writing, Severino will likely take the agency in a different direction than it had under the Obama administration. Last year, the agency issued rules banning discrimination against transgender patients, carrying out provisions of the Affordable Care Act. A federal judge put those proposed rules on hold in late December, siding with a Catholic hospital system, other religious health providers, and five states that challenged them. The Trump administration has not sought to overturn the judge's injunction. When those rules were proposed, Severino and a Heritage colleague wrote a scathing critique saying they jeopardized the religious liberty and freedom of conscience of health care providers. In a column for the conservative website Daily Signal, Severino and his colleague wrote that the HHS rule would force doctors to perform sexual reassignment surgeries. Despite the column's assertion, federal rules cannot force doctors to perform these procedures for which they are not trained or competent. Moreover, professional societies support coverage for gender transition treatments. A coalition of progressive groups criticized Severino's new appointment. The Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights also expressed its dismay. Severino's position does not require Senate confirmation. And finally, KQED Radio's John Brooks reports that so-called telehealth takes a lot of forms these days. They are virtual visits with a healthcare provider, which can take place by video, phone or text, or via the web or a mobile app. The one commonality is you get to consult a doctor from your home, office, or anywhere with a Wi-Fi or mobile connection. These appointments can be quick and save you from having to travel and sit in a waiting room. There's no debating that telehealth appointments can be convenient and potentially even life-saving for people who live in remote areas. However, they are also cheaper than in-person visits, as telehealth companies proclaim. Not necessarily, according to a new study published this month by the RAND Corporation in the journal Health Affairs. That study found that the total annual spending, which researchers defined as costs to insurers and out-of-pocket payments by patients, was $45 more per patient for people who used telehealth to treat acute respiratory illness than it was for patients who saw doctors for the same conditions. That's because 88% of the telehealth visits represented people who would not have gone to a doctor otherwise, what the industry calls new utilization. Just 12% of the telehealth sessions, the researchers concluded, amounted to a substitute for going to see a doctor. Most of the patients in the study who chose these virtual appointments might have stuck to home remedies if telehealth hadn't been available, and patients who got advice via virtual appointment may be more likely to be scheduled for an in-person follow-up appointment, which increases the cost of treating that episode of illness. The current study looked at 981 people who used the Teladoc service for over 18 months in 2012-2013 to seek help for acute respiratory infections, such as bronchitis, pneumonia, sinusitis, or an ear infection. The researchers compared these users with patients who had used who had their acute respiratory infections evaluated in person by a doctor. The research team focused on respiratory ailments because they are the conditions most commonly treated by direct-to-consumer telehealth providers. The scientists say the RAND researchers do acknowledge that the use of telehealth services for different types of medical conditions might produce a more economical result. And that's the Health Action News for this week. We'll be back with our first interview segment in a moment, taking a look at the marches for health and the renewed emphasis on health, establishing health care as a human right in the United States. Stay tuned. And welcome back to Health Action. I'm Mark Hannay. In our first interview segment in this week's program, we're going to be taking a look at the March for Health. It's a series of marches across the country taking place this Saturday, April 1st, and there will be one here in New York. And looking a bit at the aftermath of all the doings in Washington last week around moves to reform the healthcare system. Joining us is Amanda Kadosh, who's the New York City lead organizer for the March for Health, and Bruce Rector, physician, who's New York State Director with Doctors for America. Welcome, Bruce and Amanda, to Health Action.
Thank you.
And to start out with, anybody can chime in here. It's been kind of a busy week, and the landscape has been shifting. So now we're sort of over that fight in Washington. There will be no doubt new fights to come. But it's kind of laid a new sort of starting point for the March for Health. Bruce or Amanda, where are we at now?
So the march still happens. We feel that healthcare still has some work to do. You know, the Affordable Care Act, even though it's safe from the immediate threat of repeal, we still have a lot of issues that can affect it. You know, the mandate has already been, Trump
weakened
has,
a bit.
Weakened a bit. Yeah, yeah. He said don't enforce the mandate. You know, they need to...
President Trump said that.
Yes.
Yeah.
They need to make sure they're pushing enrollment because we need healthy people in the system. You know, Secretary Price can make changes as far as Medicaid and right-to-work issues. So there's a lot of ways that the Affordable Care Act can still be undermined. So we want to make sure people understand that. We are taking a bit more of a celebratory tone with the march because we're very happy that the Affordable Care Act is still standing.
And the Medicaid program, too.
And exactly.
That was
That's
under
very,
attack,
very
too.
Important. So many people are affected by that.
Right. So what was, Amanda, what was the impetus to get this thing going? It's kind of emerged rather quickly on the scene. So.
Yeah. So basically there was a call put out. You know, somebody posted on social media saying, you know, we need to have a march for health. This is very important. We know that the Affordable Care Act was laid down as one of the top priorities for the administration.
Right.
And so the call was put out on Facebook, and a group of organizers kind of slowly formed. And we've taken it and run with it. We've been very grassroots. A lot of our organizers across the country are first-time organizers. A lot of us are, you know, patients with pre-existing conditions. We've been joined by healthcare professionals. So,
and yes, the organizing for this kind of did start a month or two back when we were all anticipating there was going to be a major assault on the ACA and Medicaid. So that was kind of the impetus here.
Right.
To get people out in the streets, as it were. And you're modeling it, I guess, on the women's marches that happened a couple of months ago. So how's all that coming together? New York City is one of the marches.
Yeah, New York City is one of the marches. We have a march in Washington, D.C., of course, in Seattle, Cleveland, Indianapolis, a number of cities across the country. Yeah, we're trying to do, you know, satellite marches everywhere. You know, this really affects every population and intersects with so many issues, with so many communities. And we want to make sure that everybody can come out and have their voices heard.
And what is the sort of overarching theme, if you will, of these marches?
So our theme is we march for equitable, affordable access to health care for all. And now that the threat of repeal is over, we are also looking towards the future of healthcare in the country, and we'll have people speaking about universal coverage, working towards that as well.
right. So, Bruce, you and other doctors' groups got involved in this effort once it sort of emerged on the scene. How has that been going?
So first of all, I just want to agree with everything Amanda said. Friday was really a big pivot point for the movement. It took a lot of action, a lot of dedicated hours, a lot of work to get that to stop the repeal. But this is a big pivot point, and now we all need to get together and push for something better. So it's really important. So the doctors group, we saw a lot of individual actions going on, daily protests, and we really wanted a big event to make a major statement in the middle of the debate. So we thought it was going to be part of the ACA repeal, but now we feel it's even more important to get a bipartisan effort to make it better so it works for everyone.
And President Trump has called for that, right, and said that some of his advisors and his key staff people have said that they're now willing to reach out and work with Democrats on making the system better.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big choice now. He's also said, let it implode. So it's a big choice on his part. And, I mean, I think for a lot of the Democrats, the repeal movement had to fail before they could get involved. And I think both sides really have a big opportunity to work together.
You want to say add to that?
Yeah, I was just going to add that we always say with the march that pain is nonpartisan.
True.
It crosses party lines. It doesn't matter who you voted for. You know, it affects everybody. And so we really hope that we have both sides represented at the march, and everybody is welcome to come. You know, if healthcare is important to you, we want you there.
And Bruce, Doctors for America, the group that you're with, has been very much involved in the Affordable Care Act fight from the very beginning, back when Obama first came in, right?
Right. So our group actually came together before the 2008 election, and we're a group of physicians, practicing physicians, primary care, specialty physicians, that really saw the needs of our patients, and they weren't being met. And we think doctors need to go out and be advocates, because we can't sit on the sidelines. We have to be involved. So that's why we're formed. And we really did work hard on getting the best bill we could passed, and then get people enrolled in it, make sure it's high quality, and also get states to expand Medicaid access.
Amanda, your march has a whole platform manifesto, if you will. Should we run through some of the main points of that a little bit?
Yeah, our Marcher's Bill of Rights.
Okay.
So, you know, a number of these were kind of taken up when we felt there was a specific attack on the Affordable Care Act. But, you know, we want to protect all of the important health care rights that people have gained over the years through that, including free preventative care services. You know, a lot of people don't realize that you can get that care without copay. Doesn't matter if your deductible has been met. You don't have to pay coinsurance, and that's for things like well woman visits, well child visits up until the age of 18, different cancer screenings, colonoscopies, mammograms, type 2 diabetes screenings. You know, the Affordable Care Act also gave children pediatric and dental care for the first time. But it also covers things like the lifetime coverage caps and annual lifetime coverage caps. We don't want to see anyone go file for bankruptcy after a bad diagnosis. It covers...
Well, I was just thinking of my own experience a couple of months ago. I went for my annual physical, and it was such a pleasure to not have to pay anything for it.
Yeah.
I didn't have a copay or didn't count toward my deductible or anything.
Right.
It was like, this is what I get. And, you know, the screenings and so forth when I had my colonoscopy.
Yeah,
you know.
It's very important. Otherwise, that comes out of people's pockets. You know, we also talk about things like discrimination in healthcare.
Mm.
You know, Affordable Care Act prevented discrimination from gender identity. You know, it prevents discrimination for women against higher health care rates.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to the Affordable Care Act, women were charged more for their insurance. They had a problem finding maternity care.
Right.
Maternity care is a basic service under the Affordable Care Act, so that's very important.
In fact, the whole issue of maternity care is part of what brought down the whole healthcare bill in Congress last week was they were at the point where they were just scrambling for votes, and one of the things they decided was, well, let's take maternity care out of the required benefit package. And I think women in general stood up and said, what?
Yeah, you know, before the Affordable Care Act, women had a very hard time finding policies that would cover maternity care. If you could find it at all, you're paying, you know, much, much higher rate than a man would for the same, you know, type of insurance. But women in general, you know, a woman would pay more for her insurance as a non-smoker than a man would as a smoker for the same age.
Hmm.
And the Affordable Care Act changed that and really gave rate equality. And it also allowed people equality for their pre-existing conditions. A lot of communities had issues not being able to get coverage because of pre-existing conditions, and the Affordable Care Act changed that as well.
Right. So what are the plans here, Amanda, in New York? It's this Saturday. I imagine you and your colleagues are all kind of staying up late, shall we say?
We are. We're staying up very late planning and getting permits and making signs and all of those things. So we will meet on Saturday on Fifth Avenue between 57th Street and 59th Street, just north of Trump Tower. And we are going to rally there for about an hour. And we will be chanting and you know, telling our message. And then we are going to march to towards Central Park. We're going to march on Central Park South and end up at West 61st and Central Park West. And we'll have a stage there that's provided by the Healthcare Union 1199. And we're going to have a number of guest speakers starting at 1 o'clock to talk about, you know, women's healthcare and disability rights and LGBTQ community, the future of healthcare and the New York Health Act here in New York State, and a number of things.
And the New York Health Act is the piece of legislation that, if enacted by the legislature, would provide for a universal health care program here in New York under provisions of the Affordable Care Act. So it's kind of good that that law is still hanging out there. Are any prominent people scheduled to speak at the rally so far? I know oftentimes these come together at the very last minute.
Right. So we've reached out to a number of council members, and we have a couple that are looking at our invitation. We've, of course, reached out to the state elected officials as well. We have a lot of patient stories, people who are telling very, you know, impassionate stories about how the Affordable Care Act and healthcare in general has affected them. And we have, you know, someone talking about a veteran talking about how healthcare affects the veteran population, because so many people assume that if you're a vet, you get care through the VA, but that's not true for the majority of their population.
Yes, we've had some segments on this program over the years looking at that, and we're overdue for one, actually, to bring somebody back on and check in on how all that's been going. So, Bruce, there's been a coalition of doctors organizations that your group has been part of here in New York City that's been doing some things. What are they doing to get ready for and participate in this particular event?
Right. I'll just give a little background about this group. So we really started looking back in 2014, 2015, at all the disparate physician groups across the city talking, you know, with different voices, different messages. And we really thought we need to form a group and speak together and advocate together. And our initial kickoff was in May 2015, an advocacy workshop. And it's really developed all this time. And now over this issue after the election, we've really come together. So we're doing a lot of work, getting the message out. We're helping writing press releases. We're making signs. We're really excited to have everyone involved in this discussion. And it's one point to build on what Amanda said, is this really needs to be bipartisan. We have agreement. Hopefully we've come to agreement that everyone needs to be covered by health insurance, and it needs to be less expensive. So I think both groups can agree on that and work together, and I hope our broad coalition of physicians will represent that and really help move the conversation forward.
So, Amanda, you mentioned some of the other cities. Do you have any idea what may be going on in those places?
I know that in Seattle they've got a council member scheduled to speak there. In Washington, D.C., you know, we're going to have someone speak about the Affordable Care Act. And specifically about the universal coverage push that's happening. You know, Bernie Sanders has recently called for new legislation on that. We know that that's a message that will bring people out to the marches. We have Organizing for Action is doing a number of helping out with a number of marches in Cleveland. I think they're also helping down in Florida with a march as well.
And the groups that have been working together in the 11th Congressional District here in New York City, which is represented by the only Republican member of Congress from the city, are planning to put together their own contingent and come and march. They, along with other forces in the district, were able to get their representative to actually speak out against the House bill last week. He was one of the quote-unquote moderate Republicans that decided to go against it. So they were very pleased. They were like, now we're going to celebrate.
Yeah.
Exactly. Do you want anything,
Bruce? So I just want to talk about some of the members of our coalition and call them out. So the National Physician Alliance is involved, Committee of Interns and Residents is involved, PNHP Metro is involved.
That's Physicians for a National Health Program.
Yep, they're very involved with us. The National Medical Association is involved. I'm going to start forgetting groups here.
Doctors Council.
Doctors Council is involved.
Raising Women's Voices.
That's right. They're right.
Right. So
there.
It really is a broad coalition. I want to call all the members. We have about 14 to 15 groups involved, and I wish I could list every single one of them. We have the pediatric group involved. We have family practice involved. Mm-hmm. We have someone from ACP. So it really is a broad coalition.
Great. And Amanda, you and your husband are really the impetus for this whole thing. What sort of, was it something in the middle of the night that you said to each other, like, let's do this?
You know, my husband is a cardiology fellow here in New York City. Mm-hmm. So healthcare is something we talk about often.
Right.
You know, I have lived in 4 countries briefly in my life, and the United States was the only one that doesn't have universal healthcare. And so I've been in other countries, and I've been there as a visitor and paid less for health insurance than I did here in the States as a citizen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, healthcare is very important to us. And yeah, we talked about it and said, you know, this is something that we feel we need to speak out on. And he sees, as a physician, patients who are affected by not being able to get coverage. And it's important to our family.
So how can groups who are just maybe just hearing about this March for Health on the program today for the first time, how can they get involved and what would you like them to do?
So we've got a website, marchforhealth.org, O-R-G, and we encourage people to go to our website. You know, you can see the different marches that we have across the country. You can recruit your friends and family else in other cities if they're not here in New York to visit those marches. We, of course, encourage them to come out on Saturday to Fifth Avenue to march with us. You know, we still have some need to have people help us get the word out. So, you know, if anybody would like to volunteer, there's a sign-up form. They can help us, you know, spread the message.
Is there a way then for people to kind of, quote-unquote, co-sponsor the event with you?
Absolutely, yeah. You can contact us. There's an email address on our website. And any organizations that want to reach out to us, we welcome them with open arms. We definitely want to build a big coalition of support for the march.
And again, my sense is this is kind of a big tent approach that you're trying to take. You're not necessarily pushing any particular approach sort of beyond just healthcare should be a right in this country. We need to make that happen. And
yeah.
Here's a platform of some specifics around that.
Absolutely. You know, we as a group, we all feel that, you know, healthcare is a human right. And we feel that everybody deserves access to care. And we want to make sure that every community, like you said, is heard at the march.
Right. And I guess this will, you know, be somewhat of a victory march, if you will, in
Absolutely.
That we stop some bad things from happening, and now we got to keep pushing forward and make some good things happen.
Absolutely. We're very happy to celebrate that the ACA, you know, lives. You know, it's survived three big attacks on it, you know, 2 fights in the Supreme Court and then last week. And it's still standing. So we're very happy and we're ready to celebrate that.
Great. And Bruce, now in a few minutes we have left, your own organization and you in particular have been working on one of the issues that I guess, political leaders have talked about in terms of a next thing that maybe they could find some bipartisan support for, and that's the issue of expensive drugs and access to those drugs here in the U.S. So maybe give us a little bit of a 101 on what that's all about and where things are standing and what needs to happen.
Right. So, of course, one of the issues with having everything covered is the huge expense of healthcare these days, you know, building up to 20% of our economy. And one of the components of that is pharmaceuticals. So we believe that pharmaceuticals should be priced based on the value they bring to patients, and we should get the right drugs we want to the patients. So there's different efforts. A lot's happening on the state level. About 10 different states to 15 states have their own legislation on making drugs affordable. Vermont just passed a bill on transparency. Maryland currently is working on a bill on price gouging that looks like it's moved forward. California has a measure on transparency. Nevada has a measure. So it's really happening at the state level right now. You know, they're the laboratories for the national policy. On the national level, I'm not sure what's going to happen. There's different options, but we're really going to have to see what we can move forward on. But once again, we really want to be value-based.
And the president, during the campaign, and even since his election, has talked about this is an issue that he could get behind. The other thing, I guess there is just a note, there are some modest provisions that Governor Cuomo has put in his budget here in New York. So that's a stepping stone of sorts. And one of those provisions is to begin to regulate, if you will, the pharmaceutical benefit managers, which is sort of this black box that sits between insurance companies and patients.
Yeah, I think one thing we really need in this debate is transparency. Everyone points fingers at everyone else, and we just need to know what's happening so we can make good policy. One thing I would like is policies to be consistent across the states so they're all facing similar regulations and requirements, so it's not piecemeal state by state. And as far as Cuomo's budget, I think a lot of that has been taken out in both the Senate and House version. I mean, they're still working on it, but I'm not sure what's going to really end up in there.
Yeah, so unfortunately, the pharmaceutical industry is not uninfluential when it comes to state capitals. In our closing minute, some final thoughts from you, Amanda, about anything you'd like to add that we haven't discussed yet?
Well, just that we want to see everybody come out on Saturday at 11 o'clock, 5th Avenue East 57th and 59th Street. And we want to see everybody march, stand up for your health care rights. You know, it affects women, children, seniors, young people, the LGBTQ community, mm-hmm. veterans, everyone. It's very important to come out and make your voice heard.
Everybody out in the streets. And Bruce, a closing thought from you?
Yeah, healthcare affects everyone. We don't want people sitting back in their houses and watch someone else do it. We want everyone out there. And we want to be a celebration. We worked hard. We need to re-energize and really work for the next step so everyone has equitable access to high-quality healthcare.
And so those are some words from our guests. We've been talking about the renewed fight for healthcare as a human right and the March for Healthcare that will be happening here in New York City and in other places across the country this Saturday, April 1st. Our guests have been Amanda Kadosh, who's the New York City lead organizer with March for Health, and Bruce Rector, a physician, New York State director with Doctors for America. Again, all that information is on the web at marchforhealth.org. You can find out what's happening where and how you can get involved. Thank you for joining us, Amanda and Bruce.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to Reggie Johnson for engineering this segment. I'm Mark Hannay.
This is WBAI Radio. That piece we just heard was Earth by Michelle Indiocello. And I am going to introduce first my in-studio guest, Andrew Kane. Andrew is founder and principal organizer and producer of Planet Heart's annual World Peace Earth Day celebration. Inspired by Rick Ulfick's 11 Days of Global Unity as a coordinator in 2004, and feeling guided to do so, he began these celebrations 10 years ago. He is also a vibrational sound channel, singer, soul writer, poet, and ambassador for peace, sharing his gifts to be a connector and transmitter for world peace, oneness, and unconditional love. Having been awakened to 5D unity consciousness 20 years ago, receiving higher dimensional frequencies of galactic sound channeling, music chants, and sacred poetry, all connected to oneness and peace. His name, Andrew Kane, if scrambled in an acronym, spells Reawakened, which he feels is his true soul-given name to be, Reawakened Andrew Kane, helping people remember who we really are and that we are all one. He has a website. You can find out more about all of these things at planetheart.org. I'm going to introduce everyone before getting into the conversation, Andrew, but I would love for you to just start by letting everyone know how important this anniversary is for you of this celebration.
Hi, everyone. My name is Andrew Kane. I'm very happy to be on the radio with all of you. This celebration is entering its 10th anniversary, and I'm tickled pink to be able to express my gratitude to having the support of WBI and others to bring this beautiful event together. It's just dear to my heart. I was really guided with my heart to do this event 10 years ago.
And you've been following through for quite some time, so it's a wonderful thing. Also joining us is Rick Ulfick. Rick Ulfick is the founder of We the World and the We campaign at We.net, a global coalition-building organization to unite and amplify the efforts of people, organizations, and movements working for the common good. Rick is the co-creator of 11 Days of Global Unity and 11 Ways to Transform Your World, 11 Campaigns for Change. One of those campaigns is for the Environment and Earth Month. So Earth Month is part of the environmental campaign. Earth Month is a convergence of events, broadcasts, and other activities. And Rick, why don't you tell us a little bit of how Earth Month, Earth Day, feeds into the We campaign?
Sure. So basically, Earth Month is making a connection between the original Earth Day, which took place on the equinox. Many people don't realize this, but the change of the seasons, that moment of the equinox, spring in the northern hemisphere and autumn in the southern hemisphere, was actually the original proposed Earth Day in 1970 by John McConnell. And many people still celebrate it as Earth Day. And so what we decided to do, We the World, was to make that connection with what most people think of as Earth Day, April 22nd, which is when Andrew's event is taking place. So Earth Month spans the original Earth Day on the equinox, March 20th, and goes through April 22nd, when Earth Day is celebrated by most of the world. And this particular year, it also will include the People's Climate March on March 29th.
Excellent, excellent. That's really pretty fabulous. I wouldn't have made those connections. Thank you, Rick. And also joining us is Jody Sirota. Jody Sirota is a life-changing metaphysical educator, channel, vibrational healer, and professional artist. Her in-depth intuitive abilities and her remarkable sound healing powers are used to create initiations and activations that instantly make major shifts in consciousness and healing. She holds individual channeled sessions, teaches classes, and creates multimedia concerts and events for personal growth, transformation, and the creative process. She is a co-author of the book Healing the Heart of the World from Elite Books and was also the owner and creator of the Meta Center in New York. Her website is jodysirota.com. And I just wanted to say hello and welcome, Jody. And I understand that you were there at the beginning of these annual World Peace Earth Day celebrations, and you're working with Andrew again now. How does that make you feel to be part of this whole process?
That's great. Thank you for having me, and hello to everyone. It's great to be part of this again. When Andrew started doing these events, I was in them, and eventually when I had a center, we did them at my place as well. And he and I have been connected for many, many years, and we've watched each other grow. And but both of us have talked about this just even recently, how you know, there are a few people in New York that bring people together, you know, to gather the people to kind of anchor in really high frequencies and support each other in our progress. So this is another one of the things that Andrew's doing, and I'm glad to be part of helping him to produce it this time so that we could gather the people to be in it, and that are really high quality, high frequency people that really do a lot of the work in the world, and also to just do this together in collaboration, because the whole thing about this is world peace as well as Earth Day, and sort of being on the planet, connecting to everything beyond and on this planet, and also with Rick as well. Rick and I have kind of crossed paths and have sort of interrelated through many things as well. So it's nice to have all of us together to present this and to bring out and to support Andrew's vision, because this is, once you become part of the, you become part of the vision once you're, you know, with somebody else's vision. So it's nice to kind of expand it.
Beautiful. Thank you. I would like to get back into how this whole thing, this whole day has unfolded, but also how the process has unfolded. So I know that, Andrew, you were saying that you were inspired as a consequence of being with Rick Ulfick's 11 Days of Global Unity. So maybe say a word about that, and then we'll bring Rick, then you can come in and tell us a little bit more about the bigger project, the bigger work of 11 Days.
Sure. Back in 2004, actually doing something called Landmark Education, and I actually was taking a course, Self-Expression Leadership Program, and we did a project. And that year, I've been connected and working and supporting Rick Ulfick for many years, even before We the World began. And back in 2004, 11 Days of Global Unity was inaugurated in September. And I was one of the coordinators, and I helped produce a project, a benefit for them the summer of 2004. And I really enjoyed doing that, producing it and putting all the artists and helping that production. Mm-hmm. And then in 2004, when we had Jane Goodall and Marion Williamson and some other great speakers and for the event, it was very inspirational to me. Several years later, I had an acoustic neuroma tumor in my head, and it was very life-threatening. It was like a big, you know...
Ooh, a crisis.
Yeah. And it was like a waking up in a way of like seeing that, you know, how fragile we are as human beings on this beautiful planet. And then I just had this like thought, and it wouldn't leave me for days. I was thinking about Earth Day. I was like, why am I thinking about Earth Day? I know about Earth Day, but why am I thinking about... It just became spawned on me. It came upon me about doing an Earth Day event, but bringing world peace into it and calling it the annual World Peace Earth Day celebration. It was kind of like epiphany. It was like, you know, it wouldn't leave. It was staying with me. It was like very strong. It was like a burning desire or feeling I was guided by, you know, the higher realms or God or whomever it was. Because at the time, as you know, I was channeling all these amazing sacred poetries and music, and I, with this oneness energy, really wanted to spawn an energy, an event, to bring a conscious community together, a spiritual community together, to not only celebrate Earth Day like environmentally, but innerly, celebrating our planet, healing our heart. And the name of the organization I got was Planet Heart, and I got that actually in 1998. Mm-hmm. In 1998, I was home, and I was writing on, you know, with all of the channeling I was getting this idea of like planet Earth. You take the last letter of Earth and you put it to the beginning of the word, it spells heart.
Mm-hmm.
One planet, one race, one heart, we're all one. So I've been in this path of oneness for 20 years now, mm-hmm. and this Earth Day event for the past 10 years has been really something dear to my heart to just bring people together.
Excellent. And I would love for you, Rick, to join us again and tell us something about the 11 Days of Global Unity and how this is the fulfillment of your calling and your dream. And tell us a bit about what's happening, because I know it's always developing. There's always something new going on.
Sure. Thank you. And by the way, thank you again for supporting this important work that people are doing for peace, sustainability, and transformation. Catherine, you've been a real champion over the years, and we all appreciate that.
Thank you.
And with the WBAI behind it all, which is just incredible. So thank you. Mm-hmm. So yes, 11 Days of Global Unity is a platform for change makers around the world. And as Andrew mentioned, we started in 2004. We had some amazing people who've been part of it over the years, including, as he mentioned, Jane Goodall and Marianne Williamson, but also Archbishop Desmond Tutu and Deepak Chopra and Daniel Ellsberg, Amy Goodman, Bill McKibben, Eve Ensler, Arun Gandhi, a long, long list, Robert Thurman, Hazel Henderson, Patch Adams, and many, many others over the years have participated in 11 Days of Global Unity. And there are 11 themes that grew out of the 11 days. And those themes have turned into 11 campaigns. And there are many of them. I won't mention all of them, but you can imagine there are things like environment, human rights, women, children and youth, unity, interdependence, peace, disarmament. So each of those has become a campaign with literally hundreds of organizations participating over the years, and it's really exciting. The latest project that we're doing kind of puts these things together. As I mentioned, the idea of Earth Month starting on the equinox. And I wanted to mention a new platform that we have launched, which you may have seen, Catherine, in some of the emails. It's actually an online magazine that talks about trends in global grassroots organizing. And so we had a special issue, and in that issue, Andrew and this event were featured, as well as many other things, with a focus on Earth Month. And again, people, if anyone wants to download this or find out more, they can go to we.net. And it's free. I mean, or you can make a donation if you want, but you can download it for free if you'd like. And it's an amazing kind of project. A lot of people have been working on it, and the inaugural issue has 40 interactive pages and is packed with resources for raising consciousness and taking action. So we had a focus on Earth Month with all of the different things going on, and it's going to be ongoing.
Excellent. That sounds really great. And yeah. I also want to invite you, Jody, to come back in and speak a little bit more about your work, because it seems to me that you have been moving along the path of inspiration and spiritual calling as well. So maybe tell us a little bit more about what you have been doing and how you're seeing how this ties into this conversation about annual World Peace Earth Day.
Well, I think we should always focus on world peace every day, but this is a special day. And 22, from numerologically, is a powerful number, a power number, a master number. So it's a great day to gather people together. I like to gather people in places that, whether it's online or directly, you know, just people gathering in focus and intention to make major changes for everyone. And my work is as a metaphysical educator, I do that as a channel. I'm a channel. I bring through guides that give information, higher guidance, that give information for helping people through what I do, what's called the Akashic Record readings. The readings, the individual readings that I do are based on accessing these libraries of information that are your soul's existence through all time and space and dimensions. I work metaphysically and multidimensionally. So it's on Earth connected as well as connected to the stars, the planets, and beyond. So all of this that we're doing is aligning ourselves at this particular time on the planet, especially. It's a very important time because there's so much energy being transmitted into the planet now of higher frequencies to awaken us, to bring in more light. And it's interesting, we're talking on today is the equinox. So it's a time of bringing balance of the light and the dark. But when we bring in more of our own light and we access and connect and open to receive all of this, we're able to bring that into the world, awaken ourselves, see, sort of bringing light into the parts we've kept in the dark to ourselves. So I help to clear things. I work with sound through my voice and vibrational languages, which came through me as I also work with crystal skulls, Max, the ancient crystal skull. Some of you may have heard about Max. But I work with many different things, but mainly I just work directly with God, with spirit, with, you know, the guides, just to sort of access whatever I can to assist other people. And my calling and my purpose has always been to help people to anchor in more of their own divine presence, their own divinity, and to bring that into physical form, into the earth, to help to know that we came here as spirit in earth, in human form on the earth. So we're here to connect to the depth of the earth, and all the support of what the earth has to give to us to offer, as well as to assist the earth simultaneously and to work with the higher dimensions and be connected to everything that exists so that we can feel our full divine presence being anchored. And the more you do that, the other part that I work with is I always work through the heart. So it's all connected to this whole World Peace Earth Day celebration with Planet Heart. We all seem to have hearts somehow connected into the names of all the things we're all doing, because the heart is the place within us that everything comes through and exists from, and that's the truth. That's the place of connection to everything that exists, and so many people through all different things we've gone through tend to close down our heart centers. So a lot of what I work with through sound and light languages, languages of light, and through information, and also through my visual vibration of my art. I'm an artist as well, so I do concerts with art and sound, sometimes adding music from other people, vibrational languages, and meditations. But it helps. What I do is help to open up the gateways to the multidimensional heart, so we can feel not only just being here and work with that part of our heart centers, but connecting to everything, which connects you to everything and anything. And so the combination of all these different things are all for consciousness raising and healing and personal growth, transformation, and creativity. It's all interconnected to finding the peace within ourselves to be able to then have that be in the world. Everything is a mirror of everything. So here, it's a wonderful experience to be able to work with people who are doing similar things in different ways, and we all collaborate, and the whole idea is unity consciousness. So this is great to be here and to be part of all of this.
Excellent. I'm going to play the announcement again, then we'll come back and talk about the actual activities that people can participate in. You're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. Earth Day is Saturday, April 22nd, and it's Planet Heart's 10th anniversary World Peace Earth Day celebration. Celebrate our planet, healing our heart. A conscious spiritual community gathering in unity with special presenters that honor our Earth and New Earth with inspirational talks, live music, performances, and ceremony. That's Saturday, April 22nd from 6:30 p.m. sharp till 10 p.m. at the Church of St. Paul and St. Andrew, 236 West 86th Street. That's at the corner of West End Avenue. Doors open at 6 p.m. For information, go to www.planetheart.org or call 212-222 5432. And so that's the detail. So tell me a little bit, Andrew, about what is in the mix for your event coming on April 22nd.
There will be, first of all, we have an MC host. His name is Mark Becker. Mark Becker. He's going to be the Jimmy Kimmel of the event. That's okay. What he was making a comment
and
about.
And of course,
that.
We know Mark from the New Life Expo that just took place this past weekend.
Yeah, so, you know, Mark's been bringing the conscious community together for many, many years with the New Life Expo, so we're really happy to have him part of this. We're going to have inspirational talks and live music performances, and some of the inspirational talks include Myra Jackson. She's a Wisdom Council member of the Gaia Field Project, and we also have Deborah Muldow. She's from the World Peace Prayer Society. Representative to the United mm-hmm. Nations. So she's actually also been supportive and been a long time with the Planet Heart. And we're also going to have Inner Shamanic Journeys with Olivia Olkowski. We're really excited to have her part of it this year. So she's going to do a journey. She's going to do a ceremony. Mm-hmm. We're going to have vibrational sound activations with Jody Sirota. Julian Michael is going to be a celebrity numerologist. He's a celebrity numerologist. He's really fun. His talks are really a lot of fun. And so he'll talk about whatever he talks about regarding the numerological of the date, you know, and there, mm-hmm. and also what's coming in 2017. But we also have live musicians. We're really excited this year that we have Bethany and Rufus. Bethany Yarrow is the daughter of legendary 60s folk singer Peter Yarrow from Peter, Paul, and Mary. And so they're going to be performing. We also have performances with Kevin Nathaniel and Evan Worldwind. And that's going to be really exciting because mm-hmm. they do world instruments. Evan plays a didgeridoo and Kevin Nathaniel plays this beautiful instrument, which I always forget the name of, but it's a beautiful instrument. And so mm-hmm. they're going to also have some other artists. And I also want to mention that we're going to have a backdrop and called Peace Lights. And it's really an amazing visual background of these beautiful lights that have been seen in many different places all over the world now. So Pete Rogina is part of that, and he'll be there to speak a little bit about that. And so that's an idea of kind of like what's going to be taking place, and including me. I'm going to be sharing an inspired poetry mm-hmm. poem. There'll be some guided meditations. There'll be some vendors, celebrations, and more stuff like going on that night. So it's going to be really a special evening where in the audience you'll be able to really feel the energies of both, you know, what's going on in the world in terms of the planet, and also just be inspired, you know, mm-hmm. with these different talks and ceremonies and activations and meditations. And so it's going to be a really mix of eclectic. Kind of
eclectic
evening.
And sacred.
Yes.
So maybe we could play the music that you sent me from Bethany and Rufus. Lift Us Up. You're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. This has been Health Action. Stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund.
Lift us up, make our stand, oh let love triumph in our land. Lift us up, make us strong, give to right the wrong.
Hi, everybody. James Irsay here. This is your invitation to join me Friday mornings from 10 a.m. to noon for a Morning Irsay. We listen to great historical performances of mainly, but not exclusively, classical music, with an emphasis on early scratchy piano recordings. And we also talk about them a lot. No need to dress up or even wash your face. Just sit around your home or office and enjoy 2 hours of diverting distraction as we broadcast great, hardly ever or even never heard performances of Golden Age musicians. Morning Irsay, Fridays 10 to noon on 99.5 WBAI and WBAI.org.
On Saturday, April 1st, the Ocu Evolve Group invites you to the Citywide Housing Conference, which will take place at Metropolitan.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and, oh yeah, the imagination. That helps. My name is Jim Freund. We have a studio audience and a guest on Skype. It's going to be an exciting, hilarious morning. Stay tuned for instructions, because you are going to be a part of the show. I hope. Good morning. Okay, we have really, truly, that's a nice microphone creak like that. It sounds like I do after just getting up. Okay. Never mind me, people. We have a really fun, exciting program for you this morning that involves interstate fiction, international if the right people phone in and all that. And actually, one of our main guests of the morning should now actually be on the air. Are you there, Noah?
I am.
Ooh, nifty how I actually figured out how to get you on Skype without putting you on the air, which means we still can't speak to each other, but we're safe in having you there without my accidentally broadcasting you, which, by the way, I almost did. But what of that?
Am I on now?
You are. You're actually on the radio as we speak. So you should turn your internet guide off. But Noah, introduce yourself to the nice people out there, Noah.
Hello, hello. My name is Noah Beit Aharon. I publish under the name N.S. Dolkart.
Beit Aharon for those.
Beit Aharon in English is spelled B-E-I-T hyphen A-H-A-R-O-N.
Okay, very good. I can never get that Semitic aspiration, whether it is for Arabic people or for Jewish people. I can do the Hebraic people. I can do the ch, like in Hanukkah. But when I talk to my friend, it's Barbara Nimri Aziz here at WBAI, who talks to me about my friend Saladin Ahmed. And when I tried to say Ahmed, I think I just did it right for a change. I usually never get that aspiration correct.
Oh, yeah.
Also, we have, by way of support, a studio audience. So would you folks like to introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Danielle Friedman. I am a science fiction writer, and
now you admit it.
Well, yeah.
When last you were on the show, you not only admitted it, you blew me away with a great short story.
That's very kind of you.
I loved it.
Thank you. Longtime friend of Noah Beit Aharon.
And I'm Havilah McGinnis. I am a writer and a voice actress, and a recent but fervent friend of Danielle Friedman's.
There you go.
And game developer.
And game developer.
All friends of Danielle Friedman are fervent friends, regardless of how recent.
Yeah. I think that's a safe thing to say, although she is such a wonderful personality and all that sometimes I know I'm getting on the wrong side and cringe, because I know that if she and I have a disagreement, I know I'm wrong. But that doesn't change my opinion. Which is like just like a man, yeah. Exactly.
I really hope that Danielle just captures that and plays that back to you every time you argue in the future.
Oops, I wonder if I can...
I'm wrong, but...
Yes. Now, I am going to go shortly into a pitch for an event coming up this Saturday. But before I do that, give people a chance to get ready for our game show, which we hope to begin at 1:30 Eastern Daylight Time here in New York. And hopefully we have at least one listener in Bulgaria. I'm not exaggerating. And people.
Shout out to Bulgaria.
Yeah, absolutely, Bobson.
You're not exaggerating the Bulgaria, or you're not exaggerating the one.
I'm not.
To be a third of a person.
Both are accurate. No, he a fellow by the name of Bobson, who is a regular listener and writer. I should say writer into the show, very often calls in via Skype, and he sends me text messages often during the show, generally correcting things I have to say, but he's not an exclusive company there. Many people find many things to correct about what I say, Danielle chief among them, but she doesn't text me about them. She just corrects me.
This story is going to keep them up all night.
Well, why don't we explain what it is we are... I am enjoying the vocabulary of the flower. Okay. What the bleep does that mean? of the flower of the flower child before you. Oh, and you said that 22 minutes ago. Okay, before you're even on the air. He texted me.
Oh, okay. That's important context.
Yes, yes.
I was confused there. For it was an I didn't remember writing anything about a flower with vocabulary, and I've written some pretty lousy things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A little closer into the mic there. Bring the mic closer to you. You don't have to get closer to it.
Are you speaking to me or to Danielle?
Danielle.
Oh, okay.
Actually, your voice, Noah, is fine.
Excellent.
Mine is not.
And yours, Havila, being a voice actress.
I was about to say, if I screw this up, then I apologize to everyone who's trained me.
Well, yeah, really. And we're going to have to talk about that because I'm a voice producer, so... We have to talk about that. A wannabe. No, I've got 3 audiobooks out now.
Nice.
Ooh.
Are you going to tell us the names of those audiobooks?
Well, the one that is me is called Chatting Science Fiction, which is a collection of interviews from this very same radio show.
Excellent.
That came out last August from Skyboat Media, the people for whom I do a lot of editing work. But I produced my very first audiobook about a year and a half ago. How horribly embarrassing. Called Elysium by Jennifer Marie Brissett, who is a great, relatively new voice in science fiction. I had her on the air before she had published a single story along with a fellow named Sam J. Miller before he had published a single story.
Those are both extremely brilliant writers.
They really are, both of them.
Shockingly brilliant.
Yeah. They'd both be well published and well known and celebrated without me, but I got there first, so... so I can claim happiness about that. So my very first audiobook was Elysium, and Chatting Science Fiction was my second. My third is only going into production now, so I can't discuss it. We discussed it over drinks before we came here, but let's say it's a little bit weird or strange or queer or something like that. Sorry?
I ought to say, we have a fourth member now of the studio audience.
Ooh!
My lovely wife, Becky, has just awoken from her slumber and come to join us.
Hi, Becky. Hello, Becky.
Hi, Becky. We're all on Eastern Daylight Time. It's amazing.
She has a bit of a cold, so I don't know if she'll be... Have some of...
So
she may or may not be reading, but she will certainly be enjoying.
We do have a house doctor, but she's in New York.
Yes.
I'm not working tonight, Jim.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we should definitely diagnose this right now.
One time
I
had Dr. Friedman over at my house for a dinner one night, and I burned myself on the oven for a second, and I was just yelp. Whether I'm actually harmed or not, it's just an automatic reaction, more warning myself from myself than anything else. And she said from the other room, I'm not working tonight, Jim. It took me a while to figure out what she was referring to. But that was just my way of cavelling.
It's usually a warning.
Oh, dear. Yes.
Be careful, because I'm not going to intervene.
Yes. If you get yourself into trouble, you can dial a phone number of 3 digits.
I would dial a phone number for you.
Yeah.
Now, that's true friendship.
That